Conversations. Inspiration.
Is there anything she can't handle? She looks fear in the face day after day, but yet she never runs. She's unbreakable. She's a warrior. She's you.
Growth.
But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
Community.
These things happen because you have to live your true self in a bigger way.
You'll hear celebrity interviews, healers, inspirational and hilarious stories. Most importantly, Maria wants to talk with you. Now, here's your host, Maria Menounos.
Happy Monday, everybody. It's our first Monday back. Yes. We're back here on Conversations with Maria Menounos, the podcast edition. No longer the SiriusXM edition. It is a solo flight now. And we will be here every Monday from this moment forward. Happy to be back with you guys in the co-host seat today. AfterBuzz TV host, Ms. Steph Sabra.
Yes, thanks for having me. I'm excited.
I am
too. This new venture.
Me too. I'm very excited. I cut my hair just for the occasion. I'm going to flip it over to this side right now. Yeah, I'm excited to be here. And now we kind of have like complete freedom. We can do whatever we want and we can go for as long as we want, which is also exciting. I might talk for 3 hours today, I decided. Just three straight friggin' hours.
Fine by us. We're ready to learn, Maria.
All right, great. So first topic of the day. Can you guess what we're going to talk about first?
Ooh.
Okay, well, we have serious stuff to talk about, so I'm not going to go where I was going to go. But let's talk first 90 Day Fiancé. No, I'm kidding. No, that is really what I wanted to talk about first. But I'm going to hold that off because it is a crazy time here in California right now, of course, with the wildfires that have just ravaged our beautiful California, from Thousand Oaks to Malibu to all different cities in the area. It is tragic what has gone on. People's entire lives just wiped out in a second. And it's unbelievable to see the footage of the firenados. And I've never seen a firenado before, but they exist. And seeing the dramatic footage of people, and I get the chills just thinking about it, escaping. You know, once they got their animals and they were, you know, secure, they're literally going through flames, praying to God. This one video that ABC had of this woman was just devastating. Mm-hmm. You saw it.
Yeah.
I know that. We were watching it at the airport.
It was like a movie, like a nightmare movie.
I mean, I don't want to look at my cell phone usage now because I have been glued to my phone watching the coverage, reading everything that's going on. It's really, really sad. I'm friends with Jerry Butler. He lost his house. We know Camille Grammer, another celebrity. If we're counting the celebrities now, Miley Cyrus lost her house. But there are so many people. And the sad thing is, you know, when we cut to the celebrity part of this, people just have absolutely no compassion. And they're so, so judgmental and cruel. And I posted something on Instagram talking about how firefighters needed hydration kits and if you wanted to donate. And there were actually people on the post that were like, why would we donate to celebrities? They have plenty of money. And I'm like, no one's asking for money. In fact, the celebrities that have been in the line of fire, literally, or lost their homes have been so humble and gracious in a very sad moment. You know, no matter how much money you have, it does not feel good to see your house completely gone and burned in flames. And there are things in there that you would have liked to have had, perhaps, that you had to rush out and leave behind. And so we have to get better as a people in general to not just be so judgmental. It was really, I just started getting infuriated, and I try to reason with people who are making ignorant statements like that when we're asking for hydration kits for firefighters. Mm-hmm. Or blankets for people in evacuation centers. I'm like, there are no celebrities staying in the evacuation centers asking for blankets, guys. Like,
exactly.
What are we talking about here? In fact, the celebrities who are losing homes are probably the first ones that are out there donating and volunteering as well on top of it. We just don't need to judge people in general. Let's all just be positive and be kind. If you don't have anything nice to say, why does anyone use that anymore? If you don't have anything nice to say, don't say anything at all.
That statement, there's a few other statements like that. They're never not relevant.
Yeah.
I mean, it's common sense. Of course they're not in the shelters. There's hundreds of thousands of acres and people evacuated. They're not all celebrities.
Yeah, so many everyday people that had, you know, worked their entire lives and you know, had their little home in Thousand Oaks or in West Hills or whatever. I mean, now there are flare-ups in West Hills, I hear, and in Chatsworth, which just scares me because it means it's getting closer to us. But, you know, you just everyday people losing their homes. And whether they're celebrities or not, there's an empathy that should be there for someone who's lost everything. Doesn't mean we're, you know, no one's asking for you to donate to a celebrity. Lady Gaga's not asking for your money. But it's really sad. And mm-hmm. I think at this point, how contained did they say it was? I've seen anything from 5 to 15%. So it's no more than that, apparently. And the winds are picking up. If anybody doesn't understand, we have these things called the Santa Ana winds, and they are very powerful. And the reason that this has shifted and moved so quickly is because of those winds and, of course, the humidity and such that, you know, makes for perfect fire conditions. So it's been a very sad time here in California. Just hearing about the helpless animals being burned, it's been brutal, brutal. And the other thing is the outpouring of support. So let's talk about the kindness and the generosity. So on Friday, my best friend was in town. We went to brunch and then I looked at her and I was like, I can't just hang out. I have to go do something. So we went to Pierce College. Actually, we went to Taft High School first and then they directed us to Pierce College, and we got to Pierce College where they're a lot of the evacuees are staying. And I said, okay, how can we be helpful? My thing, I was such a dope. I went up there and I'm like, I keep seeing on Twitter, people are missing their family members. So they're like, where's my Aunt June? I'm looking for Aunt June. She's missing. I said, so I'll just go around and talk to the elderly. And if they haven't connected with their families, I'll help connect them. And they're like, well, that's the reunification program. I was like, oh, you guys have one of those? I was like, here I was thinking I had some genius idea. I was like, I know what I could do to help. But anyhow, what we realized is, you know, they needed supplies. They needed dog kennels because you can't go into the shelter with your pet unless you have a kennel. And I said, but what do they do if they don't? They're like, well, they sleep in their cars in the parking lot. I'm like, what if they don't have a car? And they had no answer. Mm. Now, that wasn't a Red Cross official I was talking to. So I'd have to get an official answer from them. But it was really sad. So Kevin, I called him. I was like, Kevin, rally up all the kennels. I texted the neighborhood watch group. Guys, whatever you have, we need diapers. We need blankets. We need towels. So Kevin collected everything, brought the truck, came up, delivered everything. And then from there, I was tweeting out different things that they needed. And then now they're like, we have enough supplies. We actually can't even store what we need, you know, anymore. Like, we have so much stuff. So people really, you know, came through. So now it's just donations to the Red Cross. I mean, they were there on the ground instantly, and they are always there, and they always help. So that's always a great way to help. And your money does go to a good place.
Mm-hmm. But you do bring up a good point that there's so much reporting on what's happening, but for people like us who were at the airport and we're like, mm-hmm. we want to do something, I wish they'd focus a little bit on what do we do, when do we do it, mm-hmm. where can we go?
Yeah. Yeah. That's why I was like, what do people need? And then you don't trust to just, when people are like, oh, they need this and this. So before I sent Kevin to go collect everything, that's why I went in person. I'm like, let me just ask in person for sure. And then I started tweeting it out to people because at least they know they can trust me that I'm there on the ground and they're not going to be wasting their efforts. Because the worst is when you start collecting everything, you show up and they're like, oh no, we can't accept this or something like that.
Totally.
But the other thing that I realized from this, so insurance is always such an important thing, and nobody ever really talks about it until you're screwed. So this morning I searched, what happens if your house burns down? Do you still have to pay your mortgage? Because I didn't know the answer to that. Do you guys know?
No.
And so you do have to keep paying your mortgage. Wow. And there are different insurances that would help you in this situation. So if you are in an area where there's fires or anything like that, you should really lock up your insurances. So I actually sent an email out today to get some more information on my insurances because we are in a fire zone.
Yep.
And I know I pay through the nose for fire insurance, but making sure you've looked at all the nitty gritty details. Like, there was one thing that I pulled up and took a picture of because I thought this is really important information. It says, if you're like most homeowners, you'll tack monthly insurance payments onto your mortgage check. The lender will pay your insurance premiums, usually your property taxes to you, out of your escrow account. Most likely, you'll need to pay for 1 year of insurance at closing. And it says, in most cases, homeowners insurance will pay to rebuild the home and replace the insured property along with it. However, unless your policy specifies property replacement, the insurance company is only obligated to pay out the amount of the policy, which may be significantly lower than the value of your home.
Wow.
So I was having this moment this morning where I was like, imagine if my house burned down and then I go to like, I'm like, okay, I have all my insurances, I'm good. And then you never looked at the fine print. So now I'm looking at the fine print and I'm saying it to anyone listening, look at the fine print and consult with an insurance, you know, expert to make sure that you've got the coverage that you need, whether you're in a flood zone, a fire zone, whatever it is, or hurricane areas. Really look at the fine print so that you have the best of the best that you can handle, because it's super expensive. And, you know, sometimes people just take the gamble and hope nothing ever happens. But
it's a great point.
That is my fire coverage and solutions for the day.
It's like fire safety for adults.
By Maria.
Exactly, exactly. In the meantime, Steph and I had a great weekend. it was funny, too. We went to New York. So Friday night, I was at Pierce College. Saturday morning, I went to New York with Stephanie because we had to go to the brain tumor walk. So the American Brain Tumor Association invited me to go speak to the survivors and the participants in the walk. And so, of course, we went and had some fun along the way. We ended up at a hotel late Saturday night that was literally like a party hotel.
It was
a club. So the person who put us there was very sweet and thought that, you know, we're young and we were going to like want to be at a party hotel. So we get in there. I stink like cigarettes. Someone's smoking marijuana near me. And they're, you know, everyone's drinking and partying. And it was one of those places where you could just tell people leveraged every dime they've ever made to buy Gucci and Louis Vuitton stuff that they're still paying on credit cards. And you're just like, why? Why?
Maria and I stuck out like sore thumbs there.
We're like coming in with our sweats and like, and everybody's all decked out. And it's like, so I went up to the counter. I said, could I ask you two questions? And you have to be totally honest with me. I said, I just want honesty. And she's like, sure. I go, am I going to smell smoke in my room? And she's like, well, it's a non-smoking hotel, but you know, if anybody does smoke, we charge them. I was like, okay, that's a good X. Okay. That was one bad on the hotel for me. I said, is it like really party-ish upstairs too? Like, am I going to be hearing people partying and having sex in the hallways and stuff? And she kind of looked at me. She did not answer that. She's like, well, it is a fun vibe here. And I was like, I love you. Thank you so much for your honesty. No disrespect, but I, you know, this isn't my vibe. I need to go to sleep. So we left. But I always do that. Like, if I know it's not the right situation, I don't even waste my time and go up, because I've done this a million times. I've been woken up by all of these people before. So I just ask them, like, can you just be honest? Or like at a restaurant, can you just be honest? What's the best thing on this menu? Like, I don't want to waste my time and eat something that's not going to be good. Just tell me the good stuff. And so, so we moved, but we ended up doing the walk, and it was amazing because I don't think I've been at an event with so many. I actually have not done anything like that where I've had one-on-one experiences with people with brain tumors. And of course, I've been coaching a ton of people through their surgeries and through the experience since last year when I was recovering from mine. But it was really special to see people's reactions and share their stories. I mean, I met a girl who had six meningiomas at once.
Six?
Six of what I had. And I met a girl who had, you know, a rare pediatric cancer at 34. And she had two surgeries. Then she had radiation. She got infection from radiation. She got another infection after that. Developed epilepsy, had, you know, a brace on one of her legs because now she can't, you know, walk very easily. It was absolutely brutal, but the spirits, like, she's like, but I'm lucky, I'm still here. And it was really remarkable. And then, you know, talking to different people who are dealing with, you know, the same kind of brain cancer my mom has, and sharing information and telling them what we did and what we're doing. And it was really eye-opening and really cool. Like, I felt like I was with my people, if that makes any sense. I don't know, like, there was a fitting in that I don't think I've felt in many places in life.
No, you're totally right. The security and the person who set us up there was kept asking me, is Maria okay? Because everyone was, I wish people could see how happy and just lit up when they saw Maria there and talking to them one-on-one. I was like, no, this is Maria's thing. She'll when she has to leave, she'll leave, but she wants to talk to each, and she'll talk to everyone if she had time.
Yeah.
So it was really special. And they were just such a, like, survivors. I mean, yeah, there's a different quality in people who have gone through that.
Yeah. I mean, you go through brain surgery. It's pretty intense. And it was great to talk to other people, even just for me, because I was asking people, how long till you felt normal? And they're like, a year-ish. And I'm like, yeah, I'm at a year-ish too. And I'm just starting to feel better, if that makes any sense. And they're like, yeah. And I was like, then why did they tell you like 4 to 6 weeks?
It's your brain.
I'm like, I think it was 4 to 6 weeks just to open my eyeballs. So, so it was really nice. And then I got home yesterday, and Kevin and I were very excited to catch up on 90 Day Fiancé, our favorite show. If you are not watching this show, guys, you are missing out. It is the greatest show on television. Literally. Like, when I say Kevin and I are pausing and screaming and so giddy. Speaking of Lady Gaga, she mentioned this is her favorite show too. And I know there are a lot of celebrities who are going to be little by little exposing their love for 90 Day Fiancé. It's unreal.
What?
Oh my God, Stephanie, you have to start watching. Oh, you're going to die.
You've sold me. I just would never think this show would be what you're describing.
It's so good. And, you know, it's a tough time right now because of the holidays, so it's going to be hard. But we used to do screenings at the house, and we've just been busy and traveling and stuff. But I will resume 90 Day Fiancé screenings probably after the holidays.
Yay.
It's just too good. I mean, Colt. Are you dying over Colt, Steph?
Oh my God. Dying.
Colt. I want a biggie house. A biggie house. A biggie than this. I want a new sofa.
She's like, Larissa is, I don't know. Is she like a little bit of a loser back in Brazil, maybe? Like, I feel like everyone in Brazil is like a 10 or an 11. And maybe she's not in Brazil. That's why she's like attracted to this guy. I can't figure it out.
But she's also a little bit older than like some of the hot young Brazilian things that come on 90 Day Fiancé. So she might be a
I'm
bit
I'm just
past
trying
her prime.
To figure out why she's with him. Because there is a weird side of me that believes her.
Yeah.
And yeah, because I don't think anybody would really have sex with him if they didn't. But not even just because of his appearance. It's more because he absolutely has zero cares for her. Like, she wouldn't even hold a door. Like, she shows up from Brazil and he's like, yeah, get over it. Oh, that's where the bathroom is. This. Like, you wouldn't like want to host somebody and get them excited. Just like the other guy who says he's 40, but he's 65.
Oh,
what's
yeah.
his name? Who's dating the girl from Jakarta.
I can't think of his name, from like Wisconsin or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the girl shows up. She's uber wealthy. They've like pitched the story so well. Her dad's a surgeon. They live in the lap of luxury. She's coming to live with him in Wisconsin. The whole family shows up to see if this guy's for real and if it's okay enough for their princess daughter to live. He's like, I have a feeling she's not going to be happy. She walks in and it's a shit storm of shit everywhere. It's like a mini hoarder situation. Dishes piled up, shit all over the tables and all over the floor. As she walks in, she's like bursting into tears. Like, I can't live here. I'm like, what did you expect? And if anybody was normal, they would be like, oh my God, my daughter made such a mess. I'm so sorry. I'm going to put you in an Uber. I'm going to send you back to your family. I'm going to clean this up and you come back.
Yeah.
Like, He couldn't care less. Wow. They're such narcissists, these two for sure, Colt and this guy.
Oh, yeah.
They're such narcissists and they don't care. And you're just like, oh my God, what is with the girls? Like, what was in this girl from Jakarta's head? Where did she feel romanced enough to like want to be with this guy who clearly is lying? He is not my age. He says he's 40.
And she was like a beauty queen back home. She has a son that she also has to take into consideration.
She is a nightmare, though.
She is, totally.
Yeah. By the way, this is a judgment-free zone, right? No, this is where we go judgy because it's TV and we can just have fun with it. But she is a nightmare. Like, when you say spoiled, she created the word. So she definitely was never going to work with anybody. Anyway, it's already going to be a nightmare, but... I just don't understand. It is the most unbelievable show. I promise you. I thought I was going to like this season because I was so attached to the last cast.
Yeah.
And within a second, I was like, oh my God, Kevin and I, we get the chills. We're so giddy to watch this show. And then we watched the after show with Michelle Collins, and they had Angela on from last season. And Angela looked like a supermodel. She cut her hair. It was like glowing. She had her makeup done. She had a great outfit. I was like... Like, she got, what's her name? Who's the amazing stylist in Hollywood? Rachel Zoe. All of a sudden, she got Rachel Zoe.
It's like all the housewives on the second season that they're on the show. They've seen themselves on TV and how bad they look, and they know they need to step it up this time around.
I've never watched, but I believe you. So it was fantastic. So, yeah, there we go. We've talked about fires, brain tumors, crazy hotels, and 90 Day Fiancé.
New assignment.
And Steph, what did we learn this weekend?
About everything?
I don't know. It's just my question to you all the time. What did you learn?
Yeah, so much, honestly. There's a few things. Mm-hmm. One, kind of just being giving back, using your platform in the best way possible, which you did, even though it was such a quick trip because of your crazy schedule. Being present when you're there, you're totally shut off. I was filming and you were completely engaged with every individual. And three, there's always time for pizza.
Oh, yes! There is always time for pizza. And thanks to our driver who really figured it out, because I was panicking. We didn't have enough time on the way to the airport, but I realized we were heading in the direction of Joe's Pizza in the West Village en route to JFK. So we stopped and we got two slices each. The driver got a slice.
Two each.
We got him one. I said, you need to taste the greatest pizza ever. And he had some. It was amazing.
Incredible.
Yep. There's always room time for pizza. That is a great lesson, Steph. In the meantime, hey, let's tell you what's on the show today, because I completely neglected to mention. Malika Chopra and Maria Shriver and Christina Schwarzenegger, her daughter, are on the show today. So we're going to start with Malika Chopra, who chats all about her new book, Just Breathe, Meditation, Mindfulness, Movement, and More. It's a children's book that really makes meditation easy. But what I realized is it's also making it easy for adults. And even the yoga poses she talks about in there, she really explains what organs these different moves benefit. And I just love when people don't assume that we know everything, because we don't. I don't. And, you know, sometimes I'm doing downward dog. Great. I don't know what it's doing for me, but now I do because of Malika Chopra. We also have Maria Shriver and her daughter, Christina Schwarzenegger. They are the executive producers of a great project on Netflix called Take Your Pills. And it's talking all about the epidemic of Adderall use in America. It will blow your mind. And just talking to Christina and seeing how prevalent it is, and a lot of the kind of major discussions around it for people who are on it, you know, like now there's a guilt associated with taking it. And some of the people that have taken it are like, is it me that had a 4.0 GPA or is it the Adderall? Mm. Is it me that succeeded in this job position or is it the Adderall? If I didn't have the Adderall, could I have done all of this? It was really fascinating. So we'll start with Malika Chopra and a little bit on meditation. As my guest today is an author, speaker, and wellness expert. She began meditating with her father, Deepak Chopra, at age 9 and has since taught her practice, or this practice, to thousands of people, now helping kids discover the benefits with her new children's book, Just Breathe, Meditation, Mindfulness, Movement, and More. Please welcome Malika Chopra.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Welcome. I gave the Channel One reference out this morning, but it made sense. It's like your brother was at Channel One with me, and my mom always said that she loved how much we explained everything and didn't assume that we knew anything. And that's what I loved about the book as an adult reading it. When you're writing for kids, you can't assume they know anything.
Yeah. So first of all, my brother says hi.
Thank you.
And I even remember when you joined Channel One mm-hmm. back in the day. I loved writing this book. I'm a mom, but I'm also someone who learned how to meditate when I was 9. So this brought together that lifelong experience of cherishing this practice, a gift that my parents gave me and my brother got them when we were kids. Mm-hmm. And then actually the real practical process of being a parent and then knowing and seeing how just breathing, slowing down, being mindful, doing certain exercises like gratitude or setting intentions can really enhance and make our kids less stressful because they're living in a world full of anxiety.
I know. You know, it's and I think actually your dad wrote, you know, what a tough time it is in the foreword. But I think if we read this 20 years ago, we would feel the same way. And 20 years before that, we would say the same. Because every day, life gets more complicated. But really now, with technology where it's at, it is super complicated. And it is really stressful. And, you know, I find a difference even yesterday when I went to Topanga Canyon and being out in nature, how different it is now than it was even 10 years ago when I would go out. Because we're just glued to phones and we're in front of so many lights and we're around so much electricity all the time that, you know, taking that time to be mindful and to meditate or to be in nature is so much more important now.
Yeah, we live in a world of constant stimulation. So I think you are right that every time has its own stress. The techniques in this book are actually age-old wisdom techniques. So they've lasted thousands of years because they work in different times. But today, exactly as you said, we're so stimulated. Mm-hmm. And, you know, our kids starting from being toddlers or babies or even in the womb are constantly stimulated. I feel we've lost a sense of honoring just silence, let alone being disconnected, even just having silence. And so for me, as a parent, as someone who's watching my friends' kids, my nephew, you know, just really realizing that giving them very simple techniques, not making it overwhelming, can have mm-hmm. a huge effect.
So when you decided to write this, had you already had your kids meditating?
So I...
They're a little older now,
yeah,
right?
Now they're 16 and 14.
Yeah, so they've been meditating
while. They've been meditating, but one thing I want to stress to people who are listening is I grew up meditating, so I learned when I was 9. My father never, ever forced my brother or me to meditate, neither my father or my mother. They gave us a technique. We saw how that helped our family life. There was a lot of transformation in our family life and just our parents being happier when they started meditating. So we had it as a tool for ourselves. So when I became a parent, I really followed that example where my kids learned how to, they watched me meditate. My dad actually taught both of them when they were about 4 or 5 years old, but I've never forced them. And I think that's why I wrote this book for kids directly, because I know as parents, we're trying so hard to, you know, teach our kids to take away stress. And sometimes we force them to do things which actually may be more stressful. The goal of this book was here, you guys explore it, you discover it, and then maybe give parents some tips for themselves on their own practice, what they can do.
Yeah, so you got to lead by example, like
absolutely.
Your parents did. So when your parents taught you, did you love it from go, or and were you religious about it?
No, not at all. So my parents, our story is I was about 9, got them was about 6. And my dad was a pretty stressed out, miserable doctor. Like he smoked incessantly. He drank a lot. He'd come home from the hospital because he was working 24/7 and basically just drink to go to sleep. And when he was around, my parents just were not getting along. So it was pretty stressful, actually. And I remember very clearly when my father discovered meditation one day, living in Boston. And overnight, his life changed. So he was always very dramatic. And so he gave up smoking and drinking immediately. He took my mom the next day to learn how to meditate. My brother and I learned the next day. By the end of the week, my dad's brother, my mom's sister, the entire Indian community had learned how to meditate. And so there was a lot of momentum around his experience. But what changed was that my parents' relationship became so much better. My dad was around more. He was happier. Suddenly he'd look at Gautam and I and be like, you know, so what grade are you actually in? Like, he was more interested as a parent in us and more empathetic. So that was really the transformation where I saw the benefits of meditation was in our family life. I always loved just that ability to find some quiet time, but I was a very irregular meditator, so as my brother got them through the last, I'm 46 now, 47 now, you know, so it's been a long time, but I've gone through years where I meditate regularly, years where I don't meditate at all. About 4 or 5 years ago, you know, I am a mom with 2 kids and a busy career. I wasn't meditating at all until I kind of reached like this crisis point a few years ago where I was like, I'm really stressed and exhausted and have the excuse that I don't have time. Which, of course, was the reason I was so stressed and whatnot. So I really kind of reevaluated and made a commitment to bring these practices into my personal life. So the book is really a reflection of that, too.
See, all of that, I think, helped so many people who were just listening, because everyone keeps being told to meditate, but it's hard to invest time into something you don't know what the reward is going to be necessarily, right? Oh, you're a full better, great. But when you hear the example of where your family was, so many families are in that situation. Yeah. And to know that that helped. And then also with you personally, kind of being irregular about it, you obviously saw the difference from when you were meditating and when you weren't, right?
Yeah. And I think that's the other thing. A lot of meditation techniques seem very overwhelming to people. And what I wanted to do with this book and some of my other work is just break it down and make it really simple. Mm-hmm. You know, these are simple techniques. Breathing has huge benefits when you just stop, breathe, and kind of go from a reactive response to a more responsive response to stressful situations. Being mindful, you know, it's not that hard to do 1 minute, 2 minutes. So I really try to present it in small bites because I think often it's just too overwhelming. And yes, like with exercise or with diet, it feels like another thing, you know, I need to do, I'm stressed about it. Once you start changing, then you see the benefits, but it seems overwhelming in the beginning. So my suggestion is start with just taking one deep breath. Start with taking a minute for an exercise, 2 minutes. And that's why for kids, presenting it in that way makes it really accessible, easy, and hopefully fun.
Yeah, I think it's bite size is always helpful with everything. And that's what I love, that there were 1 minute meditations in here, or just even, you know, be still. I just flipped to that page. Be still. Sometimes lying down without doing anything can be the most relaxing or most difficult thing to do. I do this sometimes in the morning. I'll go outside and I'll do some yoga as the sun is coming up and it's a little warm, but it's still fresh outside. And I'll just lay down on the ground and stretch my arms over my head. And it feels so good to just lay outside under trees and be still.
And sometimes it's also really difficult. Like, I was doing my yoga yesterday and I knew that I had a lot of things, that emails that were coming in text. And just to like sit still, like lie still for a minute seemed kind of like torture because I wanted to grab my phone.
Because you're afraid you're going to forget.
Because and so I kind of was like, I forced myself, okay, it's 1 minute. I can do this. So I think there are times, and then when you do that and you breathe and you kind of reassure yourself, you realize nothing's, you know, it's it's so beneficial to do these things. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we do just have to, even if it's for a minute, discipline ourselves.
Yeah, we just had Andy Puttycomb, the co-founder of Headspace, on the other day. And it was so great because what I love about that app is it's bite-sized. So sometimes in the morning, if I was up late and I couldn't wake up early enough to do my normal routine, I'll choose the 3-minute meditation or the 5-minute meditation. And it feels good to know that I'm still sticking to my self-care goals.
Yep.
But without having to, you know, be so stressed about it. When you think about, you know, self-care, do you feel like meditation leads to mindfulness, or you have to practice both separately?
I think at different times in our life and different phases even of our day, different things can help. So I'm not a huge advocate of trying one thing and being disciplined. And that's, again, what I tried to do in the book, is present different things. Because for me, my daily meditation practice, which is basically once a day for about 15 to 20 minutes, I try to sit quiet kind of in between the craziness of my work day, which usually goes till about 3 before my kids come home. I have that little window of time before afternoon begins. So for me, that quiet time is really important. But you mentioned going out in nature. For some people, going out and just being in nature, which is very healing, trying to let go of your devices and just kind of appreciating the sun and the air, that may be easier. For kids, sometimes it's really hard to sit still.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't really recommend that. You know, maybe try some movement or mindful walking or mindful eating exercise.
I remember reading that in here. There was a mindful walking.
Yeah.
And so that even can for be, 1 minute.
Yeah. Take 10 steps and
so
just be aware.
So explain what you mean by that for people who are listening.
Yeah. So there are different mindfulness exercises, but like one of the mindful walking exercises I have in there is literally just take 10 steps and, you know, just observe how when you lift your foot up, take a deep breath in, and when you put it back down, breathe out. Mm-hmm. And just doing that for 10 steps, which is something that's active, but also involving breath and balance, really just makes you aware of your physical body and how you're feeling. There's another mindful walking exercise in the book, which is going for a walk in nature. Mm-hmm. And just being aware of what's happening around you. Like, you know, choose your different senses. How is the wind feeling on your skin? What are you seeing? What are you feeling? What are you smelling? And really doing that for a minute or 2 minutes. And it's amazing. You can do the same walk you do like throughout the day, like going to your room. But just doing that mindfully, actually, you're amazed at what a different experience that is.
Especially because you don't have your phone.
Yeah.
I think it's so, so important for us to get rid of the devices. I know when I go for a walk with Max, I have it in my doggy bag with my, you know, poop bags and things like that. But just not being able to need it other than for safety reasons, it feels so good to just breathe everything. And I love when you talk about, you know, feeling your hands and thinking about all these things, because we're so disconnected from our bodies. And then we're surprised when things are going wrong and we didn't see it.
Yeah. And, you know, so that's why body awareness exercises, and body awareness exercises are great with young ones too, because again, they can, you know, it's active to feel different parts of your body. But, you know, your body also represents your feelings and your stress. And, you know, as you become more aware of your body, actually, funny story, I had a really stressful day yesterday. And I realized that I got upset about something, and literally for about 2 hours, like I could feel like kind of the dizziness in my head, or my heart just kind of feeling heavy, or, you know, you just feel anxiety. So when you do these exercises, you become, one, more aware of how your body is reacting, but you also then find the tools like slowing down and breathing or stretching or moving to release that physically as well.
Yeah. The thing that I've been doing too is getting back to my self-care and actually creating a self-care routine and saying, this is something that's non-negotiable that I'm going to do every day, one version or another, whether it's walking the dog or going and taking a Pilates class really early in the morning or doing some physical activity outside and meditating. It's just the way I want to start my day because that's yeah. how I feel like I can be my best. But if people are listening right now and they're like, oh, meditation, and oh, now I'm going to get my kids to meditate and all this stuff, think about how stressful your life is right now. And think about how unhappy you can be at times. And if you can create a routine where you are meditating, maybe even with your kids in the morning, so now you're showing them that starting your day is important. You can't give a better gift to yourself or to your kids than to sit down and to do this together and focus on your well-being before you go out into the day to do the things that you're doing.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep. And there are some other exercises that maybe it seemed easier to do. So I ended this book really focused a lot on motivation mm-hmm. And other ways of how we look at the world, because that was a huge part of how my brother and I grew up. So another thing that may not seem as overwhelming as sitting quietly, because for some people, actually sitting quietly for 5 minutes seems really overwhelming. Mm-hmm. So we started our day setting intentions, you know, setting what are your aspirations for today, and not asking yourself, what do I want? Not all the material things that I want, you know, like, you know, I want to go buy something or eat something, but really thinking about what do I want to feel today? Mm-hmm. So today I want to feel connected, or my intent is to feel joyful. And when you start a day setting an intent, you start, you put that anchor out there. So you just start to notice throughout the day other things. And setting a family intent in the morning mm-hmm. could be great. And another thing that I recommend for people to do is end your day with gratitude. So, you know, think of one or two or maybe three things from the day that you are grateful for. And in the most stressful of days, at the end of the day, there is something you could feel grateful for, whether it's even just mm-hmm. feeling grateful for fresh air. Yeah. So, you know, gratitude, what it does is it starts to change your perspective, and it's a really great way to end your day to bring some good energy in.
Mm. I have loved hearing you guys talk about mindfulness, but I don't exactly know, like for someone who knows very little yep. about this, what mm-hmm. does that actually mean to be mindful?
Love you.
Yeah, love it.
I asked the same question the other day of Andy yeah. Puddicombe, but go yeah. ahead. Yeah,
and I start the book with really defining that. So meditation is about quieting your mind. Mindfulness is about being aware of your thoughts, your body, and what's going on around you. Mm. And then yoga is a way that involves movement and breathing to really release that and be aware of your body. And then motivation is really ways that we think to change our perspective on life.
So it's kind of like a presence, like being more present.
Yes. Yeah. And mindfulness, again, technically isn't the right word. Many people prefer the word awareness because it's more about, you know, mindfulness kind of indicates that it's all in your head, but awareness really represents just being aware of, like, how is my body feeling? How am I breathing?
Yeah.
A huge thing, and I talk about it in the book, is being aware of your thoughts. So, mm-hmm. you know, my brother and I were the guinea pigs for all of my dad's experiments growing up. So aside from...
Which one went wrong? Yeah. That's what I want to know.
Oh, many did. And I always say this, he used to like try hypnotizing me to get over my addiction to chocolate, and I'm still a total chocoholic and sugar addict. But one of the things he used to make us play this game, we used to call it the three C's, and it was to go through the day without criticizing, condemning, or complaining.
Ooh, and yeah, the complaining part would be tough.
Yeah, and my brother and I would kind of, you know, my annoying little brother would like poke me and bug me to try to get me to complain about him. And so it would become this silly game that we played. But what you realize is try to go through 1 hour or 1 day without criticizing, complaining, or condemning other people. Mm-hmm. Not just to the outside world, but to yourself. And when you start noticing how you're complaining or kind of self-criticizing all the time, just shift it and focus on something positive. And what you realize is that, oh my God, so much of our inner dialogue, so being aware and mindful of our inner dialogue, is self-criticism, is kind of complaining. But when you shift that perspective, actually your world kind of changes as well.
Wow.
So, you know, that's also a part of mindfulness, is being aware of your thoughts. So aware would be a good word.
Great.
I like that
yeah.
distinction too. Mm-hmm. I think it's so important to remember our thoughts for ourselves, because we can be so cruel to ourselves, and that's exhausting. Beating yourself up emotionally is exhausting. Yeah. It takes so much out of you.
And I have two teenage girls, so, you know, they're 16 and 14, and just watching my daughters, even who are growing up in, you know, this world of being more aware, just the natural inclination for self-criticism, and, you know, that kind of affects so many things in
I'm
their
fat.
Lives.
I'm yeah, not pretty exactly. enough. I don't like my nose. I don't like my hair. I Literally. Don't like my feet. I don't like this.
Yeah. And at 14 and 16, I'm really seeing that. And so one of the reasons I wanted to write this book, and it's really targeted to 8 to 12 year olds, but like what I'm finding is that people are finding it so simple at all ages, but is to give kids some of those tools early on, so that when they do, because they're all going to, my girls fall into that pattern as well, right? I fall into
everyone's
that pattern.
Human.
Yeah, everyone's human. I'm constantly insecure about something. But when you have the tool to kind of, okay, not go down that path
too deep.
Too deep, and just kind of take a deep breath and kind of make some shifts, that really helps with overall well-being.
Yeah, that's what I always say. I'm like, I keep acquiring tools.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it doesn't mean that I'm not immune or that I am immune to any of this stuff. It just means that I can probably shift out of it faster because I'll pull that tool belt out and grab the tool that I need, and you know, I can shift out of it.
Yeah.
And but it's not easy.
It's not easy. And we all go down that path. I think that's one of the other misconceptions that I know people have about, say, my father, or the assumption they have about me and my brother is that, you know, we don't get stressed, or, you know, that we just constantly do yoga. Like, I was joking.
And
I can't even
perfect.
Do. Yeah. And we're vegan and all that kind of stuff. That's all like far from the truth. I can't even do downward dog.
But it's in your book, though.
Yeah, exactly. Very simple for kids. Yeah. But that's the thing. We all find different techniques when we need them. And so, you know, nobody is perfect, and everyone is trying to figure out and be the best, hopefully, that they can be if they have that intention.
Now you've learned about mindfulness. Do you practice yoga?
You know, I always, it's funny. I love talking with you because I feel like you're one of the first mouthpieces that makes me feel like an accessible and safe place to practice some of this stuff.
Thank you.
So I admittedly at this point have not done a lot of this, but I feel like hearing someone who's kind of humble and disarming about the way they approach this really motivates me to give it a shot. So
I love it.
Yeah. I hope so.
Yes.
Thank you.
Well, one of the parts of the book that I loved so much was the yoga poses, and where you explain things like downward facing dog. You say, have you ever noticed how a dog stretches when it wakes up from a nap? It leans forward with its front paws outstretched, lengthening its shoulders, neck, back, and hind legs. Its butt is usually up, pointing toward the sky too. When you do this pose, you can stretch your body and get more energy for your day. It's a good pose to wake up with, or even to do when you need a boost of energy. I love doing this pose. It feels so good. And yeah, I was like, oh, it's good for energy. And then cat and cow, this is good for your spine and stretching your spine. It's like giving yourself a massage inside. Or cobra, which cobra is my absolute favorite.
Yeah.
I do cobra in bed every day.
Yeah.
Before I get up, I do a few different yoga poses in bed. This one helps you stretch your back, neck, and shoulders where you hold your stress. If you get headaches, this may be one to try on a regular basis. I loved all the explanations.
Thank
for
you.
All of them.
Yeah, I tried to keep them really simple for, again, kids to understand. And, you know, some of the other ones there of, you know, mountain pose. Like if you stand like a mountain, you know, the clouds can go around you. Or tree pose, which actually requires breathing, requires balance. You know, so it's a fun way to also test some of these things. But yeah, just in doing tree pose, you're actually breathing, you're actually focusing on balance, and you're trying to be still. And you may be waving from side to side, but you're bringing it back into some sort of self-control.
And that's good because?
Because what it does is it actually makes you pause. And it also brings your body into alignment, and it makes you more aware. And that has many, many other benefits as well.
Yeah, well, because when you're trying to balance on one leg, that's what tree pose is. You have to focus so hard, right? There are days I'm really good at it, and there are days I'm, you know, not as good because my focus isn't there. But if your focus goes there, that's where you want it to go. You want it away from all the other things. And once you're in that zone, that's when you are mindful or aware. Yeah. And
do you feel like it can wake you up? I feel like sometimes during work I have that moment where I'm foggy and tired, and I'm wondering if I do these techniques, will it like wake me up for work?
Absolutely. And that's the thing. What it does, just generally these techniques, they move your body. They bring in breath. So again, breath is rejuvenating. They actually settle your mind even for a little bit, then gives you a lot of rest and a place to reflect more mindfully rather than just being reactive all the time.
Yeah.
So there's another exercise that's really simple. Which is stop, S-T-O-P. So when you're in any stressful situation, S is for stop, T is for take three breaths. If three seems like too much, take one breath. O is observe your body, see how you're feeling, and P is proceed. And so that's another one that's super simple that you can do anytime, anywhere, but it really kind of takes this shift from just feeling reactive and stressful to like taking a pause and now being more mindful and responsive to situations.
Yeah, whenever you're stressed, if you take 5 minutes, even if you're not going to meditate, just go, close your eyes, and don't think about anything, which is really meditating. You can reset yourself and you'll make better decisions after. So why we say once I start revving really high, if I can remember, which most of the time I can remember, I'll step aside, I'll regroup, and then I'll come back to it. And I always end up in a better situation. So I think we're going to have to set up an AfterBuzz meditation day.
So I can get
you guys all on board. Malika, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for this great book. Again, it's a great gift for any of the young people in your life, but the adults will love it too. Just Breathe, Meditation, Mindfulness, Movement, and More. It's available wherever books are sold. You can follow Malika on Instagram and Twitter at Malika Chopra.
Hope you guys enjoyed that. I think it's a great holiday gift this season for anybody in your life that has young folks, and then you can steal it for yourself and read it as well. We're going to head to Maria Shriver and Christina Schwarzenegger next.
Guys, one of my guests today is an Emmy-winning journalist, number one New York Times bestselling author, and founder of Shriver Media. When her daughter Christina, an editor at Goop, decided to do something about the epidemic of Adderall use in America, they took the project to Netflix and became the executive producers of Take Your Pills. Please welcome Maria Shriver and Christina Schwarzenegger. Welcome, ladies.
Thank you. Look at this. We're all ladies in here.
Yes, girl power.
Although I heard recently ladies is not an appropriate word in the millennial world. So, Christina, maybe you can tell me.
I have not heard that.
I heard we're not allowed to say ladies anymore in the millennial world or female, right?
Yeah, apparently. What? There was a poll done.
They prefer bitches,
right?
Or women.
Oh,
wow.
Come on.
I swear to God. Oh, no, I had this whole discussion with an entire group of millennials at AfterBuzz, and apparently when you discuss things with them you can't say certain things. I was like, okay,
I would prefer ladies and bitches, but
me too.
Every time I say ladies, I have this like trauma where I'm like, oh, maybe I'm not supposed to say that.
That is,
I think there's
thing.
So much fear over what we're allowed to say anymore about anything.
Exactly.
I think people are, I have conversations a lot where people go, I hope that's okay that I said that, or I hope you know what I mean, or gosh, I didn't mean anything by that. Is that okay? I don't know. So I think,
I think especially amongst young men,
yes,
and women.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
I don't really know what's like PC anymore.
Yeah, it's definitely a weird time.
Yeah.
But I always say, I'm like, you guys have way too much time on your hands and your lives must be so amazing that you're now so concerned with us calling you ladies. Well, I'm a lady. I have no problem with it. Anyway, I digress from the subject because I said it and then I had my little moment. But
we all need to have a little moment.
Absolutely.
I was chatting earlier about Adderall, and I was joking with everyone that I feel like I missed out on something that could have made me super amazing in life. But all kidding aside, it is an epidemic. And you did see that there was a problem when you went to college. Nick was saying he saw it in college, and Ashley saw it in college.
Yes.
You're much more recent in terms of graduating, I believe.
Yes, I was 2011.
When did you graduate?
2013. So.
Okay. What made you see it as such a problem? Because you actually have had ADD and had a prescription for ADD, right? For Adderall or Ritalin, one of those.
Yeah, no,
right?
So I actually had a prescription in high school and I didn't really use it. And it was only until college that once it starts becoming like more demanding, more fast paced, I started beginning to use it more often. And I think, again, as the academics progressed, I just kind of fell into using it and becoming more dependent on it. And I think the problem with colleges too is that, besides obviously how it gets mixed in with the party culture, you get such positive reinforcement from your peers. Mm-hmm. So even if you don't really like the fact that you're taking it, you feel like you should be taking it because you're doing something that's good. You're doing well with your grades. Everyone's happy. So it kind of gets, it leads you down that path of maybe even if you don't really want to, you feel like you should be doing it because you're doing something good.
So what made you not want to take it?
I actually had to stop taking it because I had like a routine health check after I graduated from college and they were like, your liver enzymes are out of whack. Yeah. So I had to stop taking it. And I did.
And they thought
turkey.
It was because of the Adderall?
Yeah, 100%.
Wow.
Yeah.
I think that's what's so interesting. What Christina did was also say, like, people don't know about the side effects of Adderall.
Yeah.
People are given these prescriptions, mothers particularly of really young kids, given these prescriptions, and there's no long-term studies. Mm-hmm. People don't know it can impact your liver. People don't understand how addictive it is, that once you start taking it a lot, you have a high, then you need something else to come down. So I think it was really you also going on the internet saying, I can't find anything about long-term studies. People don't really know. These prescriptions are being handed out so easily. That made her want to do the documentary. And you were like stunned that you looked around and like, there's no documentary, there are no studies, there's nothing out there.
Did you start researching the long-term effects after your doctor said your liver enzymes were a mess?
Yeah. I started just researching kind of like any other health consequences as a result and wasn't able to really find any except for like anecdotal ones that other people had experienced. But yeah, there wasn't really that much information out there. And I think that even since this documentary has been put out, people have been coming out about Adderall detoxes and how like much they've struggled going off of it and how much of an identity crisis people have when they come off of it. So it's been great to see the kind of feedback I think that we've had amongst young women and also a lot of parents,
a lot of adults. What was so interesting to me was Christina really wanting to focus on these kind of split identities that people feel when they take Adderall. Mm-hmm. They feel like, I'm accomplished, I'm doing everything, I'm that perfect employee, I'm like focused, and all of a sudden, and then I come off of it and I'm creative, I'm artistic, I'm kind of daydreamy. Who am I?
Yeah.
Which person should I be? Society wants me to be this, but maybe I'm more this.
And maybe some people didn't have that other side, right? Maybe they just had the low. Right?
What
did everybody have that split where they were creative off of it? Do you know what I'm saying?
A lot of people I spoke to who were, when we were approaching graduation, were like, are you going to still take it after school? Like, what are you going to do? I don't know how I'm going to survive without taking it. Kind of just like a very, like, I don't know how I can continue without taking this.
Of course.
And so it's, once it gets to that point, that's like a serious issue, obviously, when you can't imagine your life without the drug. And I knew a lot of people that stopped and then were confronted, and I spoke to them just kind of confronted with a different side of themselves, obviously, when they're off the drug.
Was it a side they liked?
I think that it's a side that maybe you like, but that, again, when you're in college, the other side is positively reinforced, so you don't know which side you really should be. Mm-hmm. It's, you kind of go on this like soul-searching journey your first year out of college, which is a lot to handle, I think, for any kid.
Yeah.
And it was something that a lot of my friends from school went through.
See, like, that's fascinating to me because, you know, you're on this and you're doing what the achieving world rewards you for, but then off of it is you.
Exactly.
And so which do you want to be? Like, I think that's such a whole fascinating area for me, because after my surgery, I instantly was like, oh my gosh, I don't want this crazy world anymore. I don't want to feel like I have to work 20 hours a day to be enough for people, or to even be enough in my own mind. And I don't need to do 1,000 jobs to feel like I'm accomplished or like I've made my parents proud. But by the way, I don't need to make my parents proud anymore. Do you know, like, all those things were going through my head.
And I think it's a crisis overall in terms of workaholics and
100%
having to be what everybody wants you to be rather than being your true self and knowing there's a place for all of us and our true selves. And then you add Adderall to the mix. Like I said, I've never had any experiences with it. So I didn't even know that that's what I've been up against. Like when you talk about the competitive edge through the documentary, which by the way, if you've not seen it, it is amazing. It's called Take Your Pills. It's on Netflix. Maria and Christina collaborated together to executive produce this. And it's such an important piece. I didn't realize that that's what I was competing against. I mean, I slightly knew I was probably competing against people on cocaine because you hear things and you know, like, there's no way people could be that crazy amazing at all this stuff. But Adderall's like one of those hidden like sleuths because it's prescribed. So it's not technically, you know, a drug if your doctor is giving it to you. And so, you know, you're competing against people. And I remember I would always just look at these people like, how do you do it? Aren't you tired? I'm exhausted.
Well, I think
they made me feel like a loser because they'd be like, no, I love it. I love everything I do. And I'm like, yeah, no. I like the work too, but like I'm dying.
I think what Christina and you could speak to this, but really wanted all of us to look at parents, teachers, doctors, at what cost is everybody working like this? And it's not just stopping in college. It's going all through this kind of startup culture that everybody's working. And it's being prescribed at a very young age. So I think it's good that we're having this discussion now because this is the time when, you know, parents are being told that your kid's not, you know, really keeping up in fourth grade or fifth grade or, you know, PSATs are coming or SATs, you might want to look into this and that. And there's a lot of pressure on parents who want their kids to be able to keep up. There's pressure on kids to keep up. There's pressure on kids in the culture. You know, you have a friend who's working on Wall Street and he said, you know, he goes in at what, 7, comes out at midnight?
Yeah.
You know, and it's like...
Not sustainable.
It's not sustainable. Good for you. And it's very American. That was the other thing you said.
I loved that.
Yeah. Talk about that because I thought that was so interesting when you got to college, all these kids coming from other countries going, what are you guys doing?
Yeah. They're just like, I've never heard of this. Like, I was never prescribed this, never told I had an issue. And they were kind of all like very taken aback by how many, I would say, like American students were taking it and didn't act like it was an issue.
And it's everywhere.
Scheduled two substance. So it's of kind of a big deal.
Well, I also thought it was interesting where you got the perspective of kids who were from less privileged backgrounds who were like, listen, I need every edge I can get to keep up with these kids that are wealthy that have everything. And I mean, I grew up from poor parents, so I understand the plight of wanting to succeed and wanting to get out of that. I never thought that there were avenues I could have pursued to like help in that, but I see where it's become such an issue in this generation that that they're doing it. I also think it's interesting where they also are so self-aware to realize, did I succeed at this or did Adderall succeed or was it Adderall and me or... am I less than without the Adderall? Like all of that is just fascinating to me.
Yeah. I mean, it took me, I think it still does take me a while to come to terms with being like, okay, that degree, like I'm proud of that degree versus being like, I am not that proud of it because Adderall was the one that did it and got it there. You know, like those kinds of feelings, I think they've stuck with me and I think that they stuck with like a lot of other people I've spoken to as well who have been in a lot of like high demanding jobs or in college. It's hard to, I think, feel proud of yourself when you had something that was such a kind of like game changer in the way that you interacted and the way that you performed in school.
But I think what's interesting in the film is it doesn't make you smarter.
Yeah, that's true.
That's true.
So it makes them feel smarter because they're
also
focused
helps you
on
focus.
Things.
So it's not like, and as I always say to her, it's you that got the degree, right? It didn't make you smarter. That's a misconception. It made you focus, right? And I think this generation, you know, unlike perhaps when you were in school and certainly when I was in school, is so distracted. I think we're all becoming so distracted.
Cell phones.
Well, it's cell phones. It's this kind of effort to keep up on social media. Mm-hmm. It's this presenting this perfect scenario. Mm-hmm. The news is moving so quickly. Yeah. Nobody knows what they're thinking. And on this day in particular, we're looking at the news unraveling in real time. Mm-hmm. And so I think people are kind of like, whoa, this is all too much. What are we doing? What are we risking? What are we losing? And we really wanted parents to watch this documentary, young people to watch it and start a conversation about at what cost am I doing this? Particularly, there's so many young women, as Christina's pointed out, taking this drug. They want to be thin. They want to be that superwoman. They want to be that mom that has the kids and they got the to-do list and is keeping the job. And yet when you talk to everybody, they're whispering like, I can't keep up.
Even with the Adderall.
Yeah, even with it. And so I think it's a really, I think it's great for people to speak out and say, you know, I couldn't keep up. I don't want to keep up with that. Why?
Yeah.
What are we all doing? Who are we running for? We're all going the same place.
Yeah.
You know, eventually we're all going to like...
But I think it all a lot of ties in with this idea, this concept of like perfectionism. Mm-hmm. Also, like when in terms of like social media or when you're in college or out of college, whatever, you're always comparing yourself now. Like whether you're doing it consciously or subconsciously, you're comparing yourself against these like kind of unrealistic standards and it makes you feel bad about yourself. And then you're striving to be like the perfect mom, you know, the perfect student, the perfect employee, the perfect boss. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it's exhausting and nobody's perfect.
Yeah.
And the more that people can kind of open up that kind of conversation with saying like, we all have our own fault. We all, you know, exceed and excel in different things. Mm-hmm. And it's okay if you don't do well with that and you can define something you do well with. I think that just opens the door for people to feel like they don't have so much pressure on them to like keep up because you're on this cycle where it's like this never ending kind of rat race.
So were you in that rat race at one point, Christina? And then when did you jump off? Because I feel like you're so aware now that you've jumped off. I just don't know if you were ever in it.
Well, definitely in college, I think you feel like when you're in, I think, competitive school also, and like everyone's talking like about their grades and what they're doing. You definitely feel like if I can't keep up, I'm going to fall behind. You like, your mind can just kind of spin you into a ball deep down. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, yeah, you feel like you need to kind of keep up. That was, I think, probably the point like towards the end of my college that I felt like I was on it and it was exhausting. I was exhausted. And after that, I think I still struggle, I would say, at times with kind of not like trying to compare myself to other people. I think when you're also in your like mid to late 20s, it's like hard not to.
And where they are with their achievements versus you. Yeah.
Yeah. I think, I mean, I'm sure that kind of just continues throughout life, but just staying in your own lane.
Exactly.
Yeah. Just to like stay in your own lane and kind of more like self-acceptance and being happy with where you're at. Just kind of you give the ticket back in.
How do you give advice to people to do that, though? And Maria, if you have advice for it, too, jump in.
I would say, I think from a young age, like looking back, I would say for at least personally for parents to be more accepting of their children, the ways that children learn. And I think not to put any kids down if they learn or, you know, develop in different ways. I think the more accepting that we can be, the more that they won't kind of go into the world with any thoughts like, I'm stupid, I can't learn properly. I think that's a huge... way that we can change that at a young age. After that, I think that everyone obviously is like on their own journey. I think the more you can become in touch and try to accept yourself for who you are and like those parts of yourself, even though it's really difficult, I think that that's the best thing that you can do for yourself.
I think that's a perfect answer. I think also the education system, I think, is beginning to change, but I think it can respond better to, as Christina said, the different ways children learn. I saw a piece about the other day in the paper about how, teenagers need to start in school later. They need more sleep. It's not good for them to be started earlier. Certain kids learn very creatively, very visually. Mm-hmm. The school system has more, an emphasis on rote learning, one kind of learning. learner. Yeah. And I think the more educators, parents, all of us can be aware, as Christina said, to the different ways we all learn, to the different schedules that people learn at. I think that that's a really great conversation that can begin to be had. Certainly, it's very different than when I was in school. I think it's even different from when she was in school. But I think also for parents to understand, if you have more than one kid, and even if you have one kid, they may not learn like you think they're going to learn. Yeah. And maybe, like, we have four kids and they all learn differently. So maybe they can't all go to the same school, or maybe they shouldn't be in all the same programs, or just because one kid is good in one thing doesn't mean the other kid. And certainly our parenting has to adjust as well to that. And I think also that, you know, parents need to be more and more educated about when, you know, educators come to them and say 4 hours of homework, 3 hours, that's what it is in this school. Well, we don't need that. Yeah. What is the point of that? And I used to be kind of arguing a lot at my kids' school about the level of homework, but I was in the minority. Most parents really liked 3-4 hours of homework. And I was just like, why? Where are we all going? You know? But I think there's so much competition to get into these schools. And as I try to say to most parents now, like, your kid's going to find a school, it's going to be okay.
Yeah.
Because it really has a lot more to do with work ethic, right? Curiosity, being willing to, you know, make an effort and try. And so I've learned so much from Christina about, where kids are at, different learning styles, how other people used to work. You gave me that great article about some of the greatest philosophers and educators of our time, they came in, they worked for 2 or 3 hours in the morning, and then they thought the rest of the day. They spent time thinking and evaluating and creating. And now, you know, this culture of like 24/7 is new.
It's crazy.
It's crazy. And I don't think it's helpful to anybody's mental, emotional, physical health.
No, that's why we all go to Europe and we're like, this is life. Right. But I think it's such a big deal. And I think it's a big conversation, because how do we slow down and remove the fear, right?
By doing that, by talking about it, by saying, you know what, I'm not going to go out every single night to every single event. I'm not going to work. If I employ people, you know, you can send them home at 5 o'clock. Yeah, mm-hmm. You can. You can. You work at Goop, and they took 2 weeks off.
Yeah.
The summer they closed the office and
kind of just like, no one sent emails. You know, this is a company break for everyone to, you know, delete the email off your phone, delete Slack off your phone. I want you to like decompress, be creative, think,
and come back
for the fall.
Yeah.
And it was the best thing that I think that any company can do. And it's the best thing, I think, for our company too, to do, for people to just like decompress and think. Because a lot of time during the year, you're kind of just, you're going, and you're not really like sitting there decompressing, thinking. And so, I mean, it's an amazing company policy that they have. And I think that other companies should definitely look to that.
It's so interesting. Like, I think because that's what I've been doing in this last year in recovery, is just like chill, right? I'm still doing some stuff, of course, but the conversation always goes to, so what are you doing now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're expecting the laundry list. And I'm like, nothing. Yeah. And they're like, what? And Kevin goes, Maria, don't say nothing. And I'm like, well, he's like, you're doing stuff. And I'm like, I know, but I don't want to feel like I have to give people a list of things for them to think I'm important enough to talk to, or hanging on to my place in this business or anything like that. Like, to me, I want to live and I want to be calm and happy because I know what's coming. I don't want to get sick and have anything worse than I already have had to deal with, because I'm thinking I need to be in that rat race. It's like, you know, your body is in fight or flight constantly when you're in that rat race.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I keep telling a lot of my friends who are agents in this business and such, and they're doing the, you know, 9 a.m. to 11 p.m. schedule, right?
Yeah.
I'm like, you can't sustain that forever. You're going to get sick. You've got to take time. You've got to unplug. You've got to do things to rejuvenate
your body. I think people know that, but they don't do it.
Well, they're scared.
They're scared to do it.
Yeah.
Because everybody's scared about missing out, scared about, I get that a lot. Why aren't you doing, you know, why aren't you on the Today Show more? Yeah. Why aren't you doing this more? And I'm like, well, because I want to be, I've made decisions about what's important in my life. And that started with the birth of her older sister. And with each child, I kind of adjusted my career more and more. And I didn't want to be working like that 24/7. Yeah. I had done that as a young woman in my 20s and knew it wasn't sustainable and knew it wasn't going to be, I couldn't be the kind of parent that I wanted to be if I was doing that. And I think we all have to kind of constantly step back and say, you know, how is my life? Let me look at my life. I'm a provider. I'm a parent. I'm a, you know, I'm taking care of my parents too. There's mm-hmm. so many people who are caregiving, raising kids, taking care of parents, mm-hmm. and something's got to give, but we have to have the courage to have that conversation. Take your pills. I think, you know, kind of looks at some of that at yeah. what the doctors in there are saying, at what cost, what are we losing when people's heads are in a computer 18 hours a day? What are they missing? I go to New York, I get on the elevator. Everybody gets on the, no one's even looks up to see yeah. who's on the elevator. Mm-hmm. Everybody's face is in the phone. I'll be like, hello, you know, everybody's like, oh, sorry. But we're missing, you know, everything. You see people walking across the street almost getting hit because yeah. their, you know, faces in a phone. So I think that it's a conversation that parents can have at kitchen tables all across this country. It's in a conversation for employers to have with their employees. How is your emotional health? How is your physical yeah. health? How is your mental health? Right. Okay. And it's a conversation that I think, you know, educators need to be having mm-hmm. amongst themselves and in schools. Like, what are we doing? And particularly so many schools are struggling between exercise time, they're with the arts, they're trying to keep up. So they're cutting things that bring children time to play, time to dream, time to, you know, for the arts. And I think this is a larger national conversation that we should and could be having
yep.
Instead of like running around with what we're running around with in the news.
I 100% agree. So how does one navigate this world? Like, if you're a parent of someone in high school, how would you want to be guided and how would you advise people to guide so that they can be who they're going to be and remove that kind of fear of, are they going to be good enough for me to brag about my kid? Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's the yeah. thing is everybody wants to brag. Oh, my daughter got into Duke. Oh, my son got into Harvard. Oh, my kid's going to be a doctor. So there is so much pressure on young people to succeed, right? Like, even in the doc, the woman was saying, mm-hmm. I got a master's degree, so I want my kid right. to have a doctorate degree. Mm-hmm. You know, I want him to be better than me. And it's like, holy moly. Like,
I feel like the college conversation's gotten worse even since I've applied wow. and gone to college.
Yeah.
Just
yeah.
even like hearing about it with Christopher's year, I think in Patrick's year, just like the competitiveness amongst parents also.
Like, yeah.
Not even the kids, just yes. the parents. It's like, whoa, it's a lot.
Yeah.
It's I crazy. Think really trying to have a conversation for parents with their children, you know, is this the right school for you? Do you want to be a dancer? Do you want to be in an art school? Do you, maybe you don't want to go to that college that I thought you wanted to go to. Maybe you want to go to a community college and go to beauty school, or maybe you want to start a bakery. Or, you know, I think one of the things that I always wanted to say to our kids was like, whatever you want to do, it's fine with me. You want to open a bakery, God bless. You want to open a coffee shop, God bless. You want to, you know, do a dog walking business, I just want you to do something.
Where did that come from, though? Because you come from such an overachieving family.
That came from
family.
Me being a member of an overachieving family. That came from, you know, just a...
seeing the other side of
well,
it.
Well, just a relentless schedule and two relentless parents who, you know, I never dared to sit down till a couple years ago. So I think, you know, you want your kids to feel that they're enough just by their being, yeah. not by what they do. And I'm not blaming my parents. My parents, I think, were raised in a time where what you did is how you got love.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, I think you want to feel loved for who you are, not for what you do.
You're saying, Christina, that millennials are burning out faster than ever?
From my experience and from yeah. what I've been reading online, yeah. I think just the work cycle, keeping up with social media, you have Snapchat, Twitter, Instagram, emails, personal emails, text messages, keeping up with your family. It's just...
By the way, none of that you're getting paid for, by the way.
Yeah, I know.
Like, right? It's like it's... Keep up with all these things you have to do.
That... It's like a fear of missing out. So you have to kind of keep up and then... But you can't. It's just unrealistic to feel like you need to keep up with all those things. But that kind of like fear of missing out or fear of falling behind is what keeps people... up and going, and I think eventually just it does lead to a burnout where people are like, I can't do this anymore.
I think it's also a fear of wanting something different and expressing it that you feel okay with, like actually saying, I don't want that. And that is what's prized. That is, you know, what everybody looks to, right? To be on, you know, successful, on the cover of a magazine and all that sort of stuff. But, and I'm sure you have found this, and I constantly say this to my kids and all the people that I've interviewed who are like on that thing, when the camera goes off, they're like, I'm exhausted. I cannot keep this up.
I know.
And they're whispering. And I think the more openly we can talk about, as my mother always said to me, you know, your life is a marathon. Don't treat it like a sprint. You don't have to have everything all at one time. So look at your life. I talk a lot about trying to look at your life over the decades and imagine what you want your life to look at when you're 70, 75. And you don't need to be the first person by 25 to do this, this, or this. You know, I try to, you know, Christina has a brother who's like, I'm like, just take a minute, you know, but it's really hard for him to, I think, accept that because people want everything and they want it all right now.
I think it's hard for everyone to accept all of it. Yeah. But hopefully with this documentary and even your book, what was the title of your book?
I've been thinking.
It's
Reflections, Prayers, and Meditations for a Meaningful Life.
I love that. I'm going to get that and read that right away. You can get the documentary, of course, Take Your Pills on Netflix. And you can follow Maria on Instagram and Twitter at Maria Shriver. You can follow Christina on Instagram at Christina Schwarzenegger. Hope you enjoyed that. If you haven't seen the documentary on Netflix, Take Your Pills, I highly, highly recommend it. Again, thank you guys for listening to our free Conversations with Maria Menounos podcast edition. Please help us by rating, commenting, subscribing, of course, on Apple Podcasts. If you love the show, be sure to tell a friend. We're really trying to grow the community here. And if you would be so kind as to social out for us and let people know that you're a fan of it so that maybe they'll join on and check it out too. Maybe, you know, social out a favorite episode, perhaps. That would be super cool. If you want to join our newsletter with life-changing tips and tricks, lots of great giveaways and more, go to mariamenounos.com. In the meantime, follow us at Maria Menounos, at Steph Sabra, at Christy Reports. And remember, be nice people, make good choices, and be present.